Shalom and welcome to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. This is a recording of a Shabbat learning session with TBA rabbinic intern Ben Siegel.
I know normally here we do a lot of learning of different commentaries on the Torah portion, and this week I want to do something a little bit different and dive into a midrash that comes out of, or is related to this week's Parsha, but it's not related until the end. So I'm going to ask you to just stay with me for a minute as we go through the learning together. But I think we'll find that it's really interesting in the scope of how it ends up relating to the Parsha. So I'm going to pass these out. And for the sake of those who might be joining us via live stream, I'm going to read through all the text, but I'm going to ask that we make this a real conversation when the time comes. So this is from this week's Parsha. I believe it's actually where we started reading for the triennial from Leviticus. This is the ritual of the sacrifice of well-being that one may offer to Adonai. One who offers it for thanksgiving shall offer, together with the sacrifice of thanksgiving, unleavened cakes with oil mixed in, unleavened wafers spread with oil, and cakes of choice flour with oil mixed in well soaked. This offering with cakes of leavened bread added shall be offered along with one's thanksgiving sacrifice of well-being. Out of this person shall offer one of each kind as a gift to Adonai. It shall go to the priest who dashes the blood on the offering of well-being. And the flesh of the thanksgiving sacrifice of well-being shall be eaten on the day that it is offered. None of it shall be set aside until morning. If, however, the sacrifice offered is a votive or a freewill offering, it shall be eaten on the day that one offers the sacrifice, and what is left of it shall be eaten on the morrow. We can go through the rest, but essentially we're talking about three different forms of a Thanksgiving sacrifice. One of them has been introduced as a part of our liturgy in the sense that we say Gomel for the same reasons that we would have given that offering. And then the other two are much more based out of a sense of just free will giving, either out of a vow or out of truly free will, no strings attached giving. And that's kind of what Ibn Ezra says in that quote there. His spirit moved him to bring a sacrifice to God, not because he had made a vow or for thanksgiving, the thanksgiving being all these different scenarios in which we might say Gomel, such as traveling a long distance, being safe from danger, etc., etc. So as I said, I want to dive into this midrash that is not going to be related until the end. But I wanted to do this for two reasons. First of all, I think it's a really interesting midrash to look at, and an interesting story about our rabbis and the way that they look at honor and interpersonal relationships. And at the end, we'll tie it back into what we just talked about from the Torah, but I wanted to at least show you from the beginning that there is like Torah relevant to this week here. I'll go ahead and read this first part of the Midrash, and then we'll break it down a little bit. Rabbi Yishmael taught, "Great is peace, as the Holy One, blessed be God, said that the great name that is written in sanctity should be erased in water in order to institute peace between a man and his wife." So this is a reference to the ritual of Soda, which involves erasing the name of God. And the purpose of this ritual is to restore trust between the man and the wife. There's never really a understanding the laws of how the world actually functions. There's no way that someone is not going to be, a woman who's accused of adultery is not going to be, have her name cleared if she undergoes the soda offering. It's just not how the world works. But this offering is supposed to creates the impression that maybe that is the way, maybe this woman's name wouldn't be cleared. And then ultimately her name is cleared. So based off of this, we get a midrash. Rabbi Meir would sit and lecture on Shabbat at night. There was a certain woman who would stand there and listen to him teaching the lecture, and she would wait until he concluded the lecture. And once she went home and found the lamps extinguished. Her husband said to her, "Where were you?" She said to him, "I was sitting and listening to the voice of the lecturer." He said to her, "Such and such shall befall me. You will not enter here until you go and spit in the face of that lecturer." She remained outside the first, second, and third weeks. Her neighbors said to her, "Are you still angry with one another? We will come with you to the lecturer." When Rabbi Meir saw them, he saw through the divine spirit, and he said to them, is there a woman among you who is proficient in chanting to heal the eye? And this is just like a common thing that, a common form of medicine in the day that is not so common anymore. Her neighbors said to her, go now and spit in his face and release your husband of his vow. Go and spit in the rabbi's face. When she sat before him, she feared him. You know, understandably, she's being told to spit in the rabbi's face. That's not something that you would normally do. When she said to him, Rabbi, I'm not proficient in chanting to heal the eye. He's giving her this opportunity to spit in his face. And she's saying, but I can't actually do this. He said to her, even so, spit in my face 7 times and I will be relieved. She did so, and he said to her, go and say to your husband, you said 1 time, but I spat 7 times. His student said to him, Rabbi, should the Torah be demeaned in this way? Should you not have said to one of us to chant for you? He said to them, is it not sufficient for Meir to be like his maker? As Rabbi Yishmael taught, great is peace, as the Holy One, blessed be God, said that the great name that is written in sanctity should be erased in water in order to institute peace between a man and his wife. So what's going on here? Like, how are the rabbis connecting this? How is this midrash connected to the beginning verses that we talked about? Basically, what's going on here is, in the same way that God, Rabbi Meir is trying to learn from God's example, and in the same way that God is okay with God's honor being erased in water, so too, Rabbi Meir is saying, for the sake of a relationship, my honor can be erased in water, in this case, spit. So that's like what's actually, like, in the tachlis sense, what is going on here. But what do you see as like the interplay with the relationships here? Like, there's so many different layers of trust, mistrust, honor, and dishonor. And what, on the greater sense, is going on here, and what might trouble you about this, and what might actually surprise you? Yes. Yeah. There's this sense of mistrust in the relationship between the husband and the wife. The wife is out late. The assumption is that she can't be up to any good late at night, when in fact she's learning Torah. And in the process, this creates such, because of this, there's such distrust that it requires someone else losing their honor in order for her to gain her honor back. Yeah, that's the exact ritual that's being referenced here at the beginning, is the soda ritual, where the woman has to, there's like verses that are written out, and I'm like blanking on the exact order of things, but the verses are written out and they're eventually put into water, and then the woman has to drink the water. And the idea behind the ritual is that if she actually did something to she sinned, then the water will kill her. And if she didn't, then she'll be cleared, nothing will happen, and everyone will know that she should be restored to a place of honor in their relationship. That's the exact...
Her belly would swell.
Right, her belly would swell, it would be very painful. We all know that she's drinking, like, ink water, so maybe she's going to get a stomach ache, but that's about it. Nothing more than that. So all the end result is that her name is always going to be cleared. I think she's spitting literally in his face. Yes. Yeah, and he's saying, like, do this. My honor is not worth, like, it's all for Shalom Bayit, right? My honor is not worth there being a lack of peace in your home. And he's learning that from God's understanding.
So the spitting settles everything.
Yes, it settles everything. She goes back, theoretically, right? We don't have the rest of the story here. Because, truth be told, that sort of a relationship is not going to be healed by someone spitting in the rabbi's face. Right. Maybe this one incident, they've gotten past it, but there's probably more to the story going on here afterwards. We just don't have it.
So as a future rabbi, would you be willing to accept that? I'm just curious.
I mean, it's an interesting point. I think...
You can wear a mask.
Yeah, I could wear a mask. That's true. I think kind of the directive that we're talking about here is, would I be willing to forego my honor for the sake of trying to restore a relationship if it actually restored a relationship? Sure. I, at the end of the day, like I said, I'm not sure that this actually fixes the long-term relationship. And that would be a concern, but I'm part of the job is trying to be there for people and help them walk through their relationships. And ideally, this couple might have gotten some marital counseling before they got married so that they don't get into a place where she's going out to learn Torah and he's mistrustful and thinks that she's out doing all sorts of other things. Yeah, sorry, I haven't been looking at this side of the room. It's incredibly possible that the thing that he's upset about is that she's out late studying Torah and not at home. And either he's not because he doesn't get that opportunity because he's at home. He needs to be at home and she's out learning Torah. It could be, right, like this is a text coming from hundreds of years ago. It could be that he's just upset that she's learning Torah. Yeah, it could be that it's 100% possible that he's... Okay, we've got a change of mind from this perspective. It's entirely possible that what he's upset about is that she's learning Torah late at night for a variety of different potential reasons, and that could potentially make the remedy of spitting in the rabbi's face make more sense. Why are you keeping my wife out late at night learning Torah? Why are you not giving me the opportunity to learn Torah from you? And any of these number of things go spit in the rabbi's face. Yeah, there's this sense of wholeness in the number seven that, like, even though the challenge, if you will, is due at once, this is, like, truly, like, clearing the slate. It's right. Been whatever needed to be filled has been filled. It's completely whole now. I want to move on to the next part of the Midrash. I know it's a lot of text, but this is where we're actually going to connect it back in. We're skipping some of this particular Midrash. It's very long. We skipped some at the beginning. We're going to skip some in the middle and get to the end of it. Rabbi Mani of She'av and Rabbi Yehoshua of Sichnin, in the name of Rabbi Levi, greatest peace as all the blessings, goodness, and consolations that the Holy One, blessed be God, brings upon Israel, conclude with peace. In the recitation of the Shema, who spreads a canopy of peace, in prayer, who makes peace, in the priestly benediction, and grant you peace. And these are all different prayers that we have that end with the idea of peace. I have provided sources only in blessings. From where is it derived regarding offerings? This is the Torah for the burnt offering, for the meal offering, for the sin offering, and for the guilt offering, and for the investiture offering, and for the peace offering. So these are all different offerings, and the last offering here is the peace offering. I have only regarding the general, where is it derived in specific? So all these different specific, this is one general verse, and now we're going to get into the specifics. This is the law of the burnt offering. This is the law of the meal offering. This is the law of the sin offering. This is the law of the guilt offering. And this is the law of the peace offering. So these are each like the different offerings that are now laid out, and we're told what all the offerings are. I have only provided a source regarding individual offerings. From where is it derived regarding communal offerings? The verse states, these you shall offer to the Lord in your appointed times, and it concludes with peace offerings. So ultimately, like the verse that's being referenced ends with peace offerings. And I have provided only a source only in this world. From where is it derived regarding the world to come? I will extend peace to it like a river. The rabbis say, great is peace, as when the messianic sovereign comes, they will open only with peace, as it is stated. How pleasant are the feet of the herald on the mountain announcing peace. So these are all, we've gone from like a very story perspective of how important peace is, and now we've gotten into like a very rabbinic, halachic way of looking at peace. But I wanted to end with this, A, because it brings us back into our parsha. The peace offering is what we started with. And that's like a different way of understanding the Thanksgiving offering. It's the same idea. And just a different translation. But I wanted to bring us back to this point after talking about the interpersonal relationship, because the offering that we start with is an offering of gratitude. And often what I was learning this text this week at Beit Tshuva, where I also intern, and one of the things that was pointed out to me is the sense that when we start our relationships from a point of gratitude, what happened with this woman and Rabbi Meir would never, and her husband would never happen otherwise, because there would be gratitude between the couple that they have each other, and there wouldn't be this mistrust. There would be gratitude from the woman that she gets to learn Torah. All these different opportunities for gratitude as a foundation for relationships act as a way of creating a foundation where there isn't this sort of jump towards mistrust. There's the jump towards assuming the best in people. And so as we think like I titled this Great is Peace, but really what it is great is gratitude, that it leads us to peace, which is the ultimate goal. And even though it may have been the idea behind the title was actually to bring people in to make them think that I was going to talk about something that I wasn't, I wanted to ultimately end with that idea of gratitude is leading us to peace, because when we can be grateful for what we have in life, really, it can ground us in a way that we look at our relationships in through an entirely different lens, that the sort of interactions that we're reading about here don't happen, and we just continue on through a lens of peace.
You have been listening to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. If you enjoy these podcasts, we invite you to write a review on the Apple Podcast site or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about Temple Beth Am Los Angeles, go to tbala.org.